Hi, I'm Tim Peter, and welcome to Search Chat, Solo Segment's podcast dedicated to all things search, AI, and content marketing related. Who is Solo Segment? Well, we're a technology company focused on site search analytics and AI-driven content discovery to improve search results, increase customer satisfaction, and unlock revenue for your company. Solo Segment, make your search smarter. You can learn more at solosegment.com. Today, Solo Segment CEO Steve Zaker and I talk about Facebook's terrible week and the consequences of how they're using data to track customers. We also discuss the top trends for 2019 and what they will mean for your business as you go forward throughout the course of the year. And of course, we talk about how you can tie it all together and make it work. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Search Chat, coming at you right now. Well, hey, Steve, how are you doing today?
I am doing really well today, thanks, Tim. How about yourself?
I am spectacular as always.
Thanks. Man, we're always so chipper. It's awesome.
We really are.
We're happy people.
You know, I saw a thing today on Twitter that was really interesting where somebody talked about the three types, you know, the three definitions of optimism. You know, you can define optimism three ways. One, I try to perceive the world accurately, and my honest assessment is that things are great. Two, I try to perceive the world positively, regardless of whether that's accurate. Three, I am cheerful and like solving problems. Oh. And I'd like to think we're both number three,
Steve. Yeah, we definitely are.
Right?
Definitely
we're not
charged up by that.
Exactly right. So that's, you know, that's kind of the way we roll. We like to be optimistic and we like to solve problems.
We do.
All right. So let's talk about problems.
Oh, boy.
Facebook has some problems, don't they?
Oh, they sure do. Man, I just like, you know, you peel back this Facebook onion and I'm scared what we're going to find in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah. That it's this really interesting thing of, I can't tell at this point if they're stupid or evil, but, you know, right. One of these has to be true, right?
Yeah.
So to quick recap the story for listeners who don't know what the story is at the moment. You know, Facebook apparently made available an app, and to be fair, it was something people had to opt into, and Facebook paid the people to opt into it. But if you opted into this app, you got it through their developer portal, and it gave Facebook root level access to your device so that it could see all the traffic that was going from your device to any other app or website or anything.
Wow.
which I don't know how much money they had to pay people. I think it was like $20.
I think it was $20 like a month. Like it was a gift card or something like that. Yeah.
Right. As a gift card. Right. A $20 Facebook gift card. No.
Facebook advertising gift card. Yeah.
But I mean, that's, you know, call me crazy, but that's creepy as hell. You know, since we were talking about, can you, you know, do this without being creepy last week?
Yeah. You know, and if that were like the end of the story, right? You know, I would say, okay, and I don't want to judge, but boy, these Facebook folks have like this just piling up, set of indictments that they're beyond creepy, right? It does make me wonder about the evil thing. But the fact that, by the way, you know, they're targeting, again, everybody's preferred, you know, demographic, young people. Right. And by that, I mean anybody younger than me, but I guess, you know, what is it? Was it like 13 to 35?
Yeah, that's right.
Like they're preying on teenagers, right?
Right. Millennials and Gen Z, right?
Yeah, who are happy to get. I mean, if I'm 13 years old and somebody's giving me a $20 gift card to go buy more of something, I'm happy for that. And of course, I'm sure there was some, like, you know, I'm putting the air quotes on for podcast land. There was some sort of parental approval that I'm sure any 13-year-old could just click on.
Of course.
Just that part of it is like super creepy. But then when you think about what they did in violating Apple's terms as an app provider, right? So not only do they have this really creepy feeling product that is intrusive, that I can't believe if anybody really understood what they were giving up, would do it for $20. Right.
Now that's a great point, right? Because, you know, we've talked about this offline before, and we will talk about it on the show today and as we go forward, is this idea of how well do people understand how you're using their data?
Yes, absolutely.
Right? How clear are you in letting people understand how data is being used?
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. And by the way, now, you know, you and I love the asides. So another aside was the 10-year ago thing, right? So you show a picture of yourself today, you show a picture of yourself 10 years ago. And of course, word on the street is, and it might even have been Facebook, but, you know, I don't want to indict them unnecessarily. But the whole thing is they're training an algorithm, right, to recognize people as they age. So
that's right. Well, it's certainly the conspiracy theory du jour, which may well also be true. It's exactly how you would do it if you want to train a machine learning algorithm.
Absolutely.
So it follows logically. Yeah.
But you know, going back to this Facebook research thing, let's set aside for a moment the fact that they were, and preying's a strong word, but they were preying upon people who are young, not legally able to enter into a contract, not legally able to understand it. Set aside for the moment that they're collecting data, you know, like what you sent in an email and all that other stuff. And by the way, if you really understood that, is $20 really the trade for value that you'd make for that? I don't think so.
But I don't think so.
Yeah, I really don't. But let's just set all that aside. The reason I think that Facebook knew this was wrong and that they are in fact dirty on this, right? And this is a pretty strong indictment of them, but I think they knew they were dirty on this is because they did this. They basically launched this app and distributed this app through their developer interface on the Apple Store and not through the publicly facing one, right?
Right, right.
And I know it's a little bit of a technical stuff to understand here, but basically, you know, if you're developing an app, right, and you want to test it and give internal folks access to it, it's not publicly available, but it also allows you to do things. It gives you root access to the device. It allows you to do things to make sure your app is going to work well once it's in the wild. But apps in the wild aren't allowed to have that level of access. And so they intentionally deployed it, violating Apple's terms of service. But again, set that aside for a moment. They did it in a way that they knew they could continue to get this creepy data. So they knew it. I would not believe anything, any statement by Facebook saying, oh, this was unknown to us. Oops, we did this by – no. No, they did this
intentionally. Oh, no. This was – you know, regardless of what their motivation was from a, you know, are they evil or are they, you know, dumb kind of thing for a second, there was no way this was an accident.
Yes.
Right? They clearly did this, and the reason I think that's important is it goes back to what we were talking about last week of this idea of Big Mother versus Big Brother, and have some sort of devil's advocate available, whose incentives are aligned with doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Right. Because maybe they literally just all their incentives were set up to point them towards doing a thing that was, you know, not great. Because what they wanted to get, what it appears they wanted to get, was all this data about how do you use your phone, how do you use other apps, et cetera, when you're not on Facebook. Right. And this was a way to do that. And as a business who competes with the other stuff you might be doing on your phone, it's understandable they would want that data.
Sure.
It's also completely understandable that if your incentives are aligned to go get that data, regardless of breaking anybody's terms of service or, you know, being kind of creepy, that you might do that. And I'm going to say, you know, unintentionally in the sense of incentives drove you to it, right? Oh, no. I still think it's creepy as hell and they shouldn't have done it.
Well, I think they cheated, right? I think they knew they could
cheat
and they cheated. Yeah. And, you know, this is – and I think we should move off of Facebook because, you know, you can get me wound up and I can get going on this. But, you know, they have made in a lot of – especially in the EU and a lot of the kind of the antitrust things, you know, they have made claims that, you know, they're not a monopoly, right? Everybody has choice in the market, yada, yada, yada. And I think this will be an important data point for regulators to say, no, you are in fact a monopoly because you exercise monopoly power, right? When you do things like this, that you know if you get caught, you are dead meat, right? The press release on this killed you, but you're immune to the effects of that, you know, that this information coming out, and they are, right? I mean,
they're
a monopoly. So.
Well, and, you know, first of all, I agree. Secondly, the Exponent podcast, which sadly has gone on, you know, potentially permanent hiatus, had a great bit over a number of episodes where they talked about how, you know, Facebook's acquisition of things like Instagram and the like and WhatsApp probably should not have been allowed from an antitrust perspective in the sense of protecting consumers. And third, it's undoubtedly the sort of thing that leads to GDPR and the California Consumer Privacy Act and the like. That's bad for other companies who want to do this stuff because Facebook has the resources. Google has the resources to comply with those and also to shape the way those legislation exist.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, companies like ours, companies like our competitors who are smaller, younger, you know, et cetera, the, you know, the big guys kind of pull up the ladder behind them.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, not a great place to be. Yeah. Now, the interesting part about this is Apple has smacked them down for this. And I'll let you talk about that in just a second, because you have a really interesting perspective on this. But, you know, the Apple thing is particularly interesting to me because it's worth asking whether Apple is protecting their users, their data, their business, or some combination of all of those, right? Because obviously this is, in theory, Apple's data, as well as Google's with Android, that Facebook is now glomming onto.
Yeah, so well, just, Apple's, you know, always had on this, what like, white hat, black hat when they've talked about Facebook. Like, you know, you could hear a thousand, you know, Tim Cook clips talking about how, you know, we respect privacy. Is of course, because their business model doesn't require it. So, I mean, it's easier for him to say, right? Their business model requires, you know, really good glass and fast processors.
But, right.
But it, you know, so I do think Apple, I do think Apple is able to kind of take a high ground here because of their business model. Because, by the way, you know, that monopoly word again, right? Because they do rule a decent chunk of the market. But, you know, I do think that Apple has some credible white hat in the privacy realm. You know, especially if you kind of rewind all the way to the fact they said they wouldn't unlock devices for the FBI, right? So, I mean, that's an unpopular place to take. So I do think that Apple has a credible, you know, kind of high ground here, has credible high ground with regards to privacy. And, you know, they're going to continue to be trusted in this space and hopefully it yields them more sales because they're going to be self-interested. They're not, they don't have the moral high ground because they're more moral people. They just know it can make business for them. But at the same time,
And again, to your point, they sell, you know, rectangles of glass and chips. Yeah. So their incentives again are more aligned with doing the privacy stuff. I know you and I both like Apple products and the like, but again, their business model does not depend as much per se on the data as does Facebook's, as does Google's, people like that. So it's definitely an interesting place for them to be.
And I do dig the punishment that was meted out because, you know, because they basically turned off all of Facebook's internal apps, right? The apps that they use not only to test new features, but also the apps that Facebook uses to run their business internally. So I'm interested to see how long that lasts, you know, how long this punishment lasts, and quite frankly, what the impact is on Facebook and the use of Facebook. Who knows?
Absolutely. Well, it's particularly interesting because at the time we're recording this, you know, this has already been going on for a couple of days and we haven't heard any updates about what happens there. And, you know, Facebook just had a record quarter, just had some amazing earnings come out, and use of the product continues to be at a pretty good level. Growth has definitely slowed some. So it's just going to be interesting to see how that changes over time.
Right. Indeed.
So, you know, as we talk about over time, it's probably a good time to talk about over time as we move into 2019, right? We're at the end of January, early February 2019, so we're a month plus in at this point. But we're seeing a lot of people still come up with top trends. And there were a bunch of articles I'm going to put in the show notes about, you know, five technologies that stole the show at CES. An article I wrote for our blog about why AI has come a long way since HAL in 2001. A post you wrote on the Biznology blog about 2019 themes in digital marketing, and another Biznology post where they rounded up a variety of folks, including our senior strategist, Mike Moran, talking about predictions for 2019 and these hot topics in business and technology. And we did a very, very quick, fairly meat-headed, you know, keyword frequency analysis on terms that came up again and again and again in these posts.
That was very cool to see.
And what, you know, what came up a lot were things like AI and customer experience and data and displays and content and customer journey and voice, you know, conversational interfaces and the like. So, you know, I just think that's interesting. Obviously, that's a space we live in a lot. And, you know, from your perspective as the guy who's leading this company and talking about where we're going, you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts about why these are so important for where we go forward in 2019 and in all likelihood beyond.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting when you look at that word cloud. If you were to look at a word cloud of the same, like, you know, predictions for 2016, 2017. Those words might have appeared. It probably did, you know, digital experience, AI, data, you know, those are all kind of consistent themes over the past couple of years. But what I do think is, and, you know, this is, I don't think it's trough of disillusionment time, but I do think it is time for a lot of these technologies to put up or shut up, right? It is, you know, we've been hearing about AI and machine learning and text analytics and natural language processing and digital this and customer journey that. And so it's like, well, what does this all mean for us creating value in the enterprise? And kind of additionally, if I'm in the enterprise and I'm thinking about, all right, now it's time for me to actually deliver some value, do I really have to go out and re-platform or do whatever to make it work? I had a really interesting conversation the other day with an unnamed executive, so I guess I can't name
him. Right.
But anyway, and we were talking about this machine learning thing, and, you know, his challenge was, you know, how do you get started, right? How do I, as an executive, get going with machine learning? And, you know, they had a couple of false starts over the past year or two where vendors came to them with like new whiz-bang technology that that could, you know, transform some magic thing in their lives. And
the AI pixie
absolutely
dust, right?
Sprinkle it liberally, magic happens. And and he said, you know what they came to? They really came down to one, start with processes and data you understand. It was basically a start small, right? But it was really get into familiar territory with something you know. And great, if there's a vendor out there who can do that for you, like, for example, we use a technology for some of our email marketing that's, you know, got some pixie dust behind it, right? It's got, you know, helps you with progression and with sequencing and whatnot as you do sales prospecting. And by the way, I mean, this is something that salespeople know well. It's a process salespeople really understand well. And so when Frank came to me and said, hey, I want to use this thing, it's got some pixie dust in it, but it's got real practical pixie dust. It was like, oh, yeah, let's go try that because it's a process we understand. If it gets better, we know that it's better than the old way because we saw it get better. And we almost don't care that the pixie's dust is in there because it's a process we understand. It gets better. It's measurable results. And so that's a way for us, you know, as a business to use machine learning to improve our processes. And that was his advice was, you know, don't succumb to the big sales pitches that come from whoever shows up to transform your business. Really look at the process level. Start where you understand the value and then therefore where you can measure the difference in value that's created if you do adopt some of these technologies. And of course, start small, go fast, but don't bet the ranch on anything, because I think that's where where you get disappointed. We were in the car yesterday driving back from an appointment, you and I, and we were talking about how long does it take to do a CRM project, right? And the answer is three CIOs.
Three CIOs. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's like, you know,
exactly.
You know, when will the magic machine learning project be done? Well, when you run out of money, right? Because if you try to do big transformation, that's often the case. You'll be disappointed. You'll sink a ton of money into it, and you won't understand the value that you either did or did not get. And so, anyway, long way of saying, I think that you know, you look at any of these buzzwords, and the goal in 29 is to get tactical, focus on familiar territory, work with processes, data, and value that you understand, and go for it in that way.
Yeah, I think that's exactly, Steve, I couldn't agree more. You and I have had this conversation before. In fact, I think I've talked about this on the show before. But, you know, one of my favorite things to talk about in that regard, you know that I majored in music in college. And what my professor who taught my instrument, I was a voice major, and what he always taught was, you know, practice does not make perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect, you know, and by which he meant, and what I mean when I say it these days, is not that you get it right every time. It's that your process for doing it doesn't change. And what part of the process is, you know, take it in bite-sized pieces, do it the best you can possibly do it, learn from the bits that you did not do well, and then apply those learnings to doing it the next time, right? It's one of the reasons why Agile works. It's one of the reasons lean methodologies work, because it's really about following a process for how to learn and then building on that to get better every single
really
time.
That's a really important point.
And that's why
process for learning. And by the way, I mean, and I can't remember who wrote the book about learning organizations, but you know, that really is at the end of the day, when you look at companies that struggle, it really is because they forgot how to learn. Yeah. It's a big point.
Yeah. That's so spot on. And it's funny because that's what we're trying to teach machines how to do, right? And it kind of works the same way. Give them a problem that's easy, not easy to understand, but give them a problem that's easy to get your arms around, you know, to understand what kind of outcomes you're looking for, to understand what kind of results you're looking for. And that tends to work. One of our first products, which we decided not to commercialize for a bunch of reasons.
It does make for a good story, by the way. Yeah.
And internally, we call it the magic bounce machine. You know, we are able to feed, you know, content into this thing, and it's very good at predicting whether or not the bounce rate will be high, medium, or low, and actually with very good accuracy in terms of the actual value. It's a little hard to commercialize because it's a little hard to operate in terms of the reasons why bounce is high. You might need to understand something about the content, so it's tough to scale as a software product, right? But again, that's exactly right. We started with this idea of something that's well understood. We know that bounce rate on web pages is bad. We know that bounce rate on people's experience is bad. So let's find something that can tell you why it's bad and point you in the right direction for how to fix it. And it's exactly that. So I think if I can, you know, blow a little smoke for us, you know, I think that was a great learning for us, because we took a problem that was certainly solvable. We learned from it. We certainly found out quickly enough that, you know what, this isn't probably the best thing to actually make as a commercial product, but we got a ton of learning, and now we can use that same technology to apply to other things.
And I think that really is at the heart of, of all discovery, right, is I know there have been several inventors who have quoted this, but it's, you know, I didn't succeed so much as I failed 500 times and then got it right, you know? And, and that is really at the heart of it, because it did teach us a tremendous amount about basically ML platform, builds and how to do that.
Yeah. And it's funny, before the episode, you and I were talking about what we wanted to talk about today, you know, and all, and one of the things that you brought up that was just really spot on to me as we talk about what ties all these themes together in terms of what Facebook was trying to do with collecting this data, what Apple tries to do in terms of preventing people from doing creepy stuff, in terms of the trends that we're seeing, is how companies who are doing this well and the people who are focused on this well are really trying to tie this all together by just making it work, right? Make it seamless for customers, make it something that just works the way it's supposed to. And I'd just love for you to expand on that a little bit, because I thought it was such a great point.
In order to really understand the genesis of that brilliant thought, you you really need to go check out, I got to get the product name right here. You got to go check out the Bloom Parasol, because the Bloom Parasol is a voice-activated umbrella. And let me tell you, most needed products on the planet, because I struggle to open my umbrella all the time. But you know, as silly as that product is, and I really am, I thought it was an Onion article when I first saw it. As silly as that product is, it does. It strives to be that, right? That all of, you know, first, do no evil with the technology. So Facebook, if you're listening, do no evil. But the second is, you know, make it easy, right? Make my life easy.
Yeah.
You know, and by the way, we struggled this when we first started out. You know, you rewind back 2.5-3 years where we were really focused on analytics, and we thought, and I thought, boy, one of my first criticisms of the product was, can't we make this analytics dashboard look better? And that was like, you bet, we could make it as pretty as you want, but people didn't want an analytics dashboard, right? They didn't want us to point out the flaws in their search, you know, capabilities. What they wanted was the thing to be made better, right? And so take the data and deploy it in a way, whether you're using Pixie Dust or just traditional technology, can you deploy the data in a way you can automatically improve the customer experience, improve the visitor journeys, improve the business outcomes? And that really is the goal. And yeah, if you really just distill it down to its kind of most basic elements, it really is make it work. Just make it work. And if you can, make it work better. And that really is kind of, you know, what everybody needs to do with regards to the Pixie Dust technologies and all the buzzword bingo is, at the end of the day, we want it to just to work. And I almost don't care how it works. Just make it work.
Wow, Steve, that's a great way to put a button on it. I think that's exactly the right place to stop for this week. So as ever, good talking with you, and we will catch you next time on Search Chat. Take care now.
Take care.
Search Chat is brought to you by Solo Segment. Solo Segment is a technology company focused on site search analytics and AI-driven content discovery to improve search results, increase customer satisfaction, and unlock revenue for your company. Solo Segment, make your search smarter, and learn more at solosegment.com. If you like what you've heard today, click on the subscribe links you can find at solosegment.com/podcast, on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts can be found. You can also find us on LinkedIn at linkedin.com/company/solosegment, on Facebook at facebook.com/solosegment, on Twitter using the Twitter handle @solosegment, or you can drop us an email at info@solosegment.com. Again, that's info@solosegment.com. For Search Chat, I'm Tim Peter. I hope you have a great rest of the week. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll look forward to chatting with you next time here on Search Chat. Until then, take care, everybody.